there pretty much isn't even going to be any romance. This is a pretty bog standard and like dungeon crawl, and there really isn't much chance. Although, I don't know, Shane, if you make it past a Meepo, we'll just see where things go.
I don't know if you've seen my character sheet. There's a high chance of romance, my friend. Live from the Mundangerous Old Road in New York City, I'm your host, Shane.
And I'm your host, Ishan.
And welcome to Actual Play Episode 1 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're beginning our playthrough of the 5th edition adventure, Sunless Citadel.
Eberron is a sorrowful place, where the 5 great nations on the continents of Corvair fought a 100-year war for the throne of Galifar, and only recently settled for peace after a mysterious magical calamity called the Day of Mourning. Eberron is a wondrous place where magic is studied and industrialized, and living constructs called Warforged rub shoulders with elves, dwarves, and changelings on elementally powered airships and lightning trains. Eberron is a mysterious place where powerful magical tattoos called dragon marks shape the fate of their bearers, and the secrets of ancient empires and evils lie buried just below the surface. Of course, dear listener, you don't need to know any of that to follow the adventures of our hero, Tez Proudgale. He's just a rogue archaeology student unearthing secrets in the hinterlands of southern Breland, close to the borders of the gnome nation Zilargo and the goblin nation Dargoon. Though if you do want to learn more about Eberron, check out Total Party Thrill Episode 33 for our full overview of the Eberron campaign setting.
So, strap in, I guess, because we're going to see how this goes.
Yeah, we talked about it in the last episode. We've got babies on the way, and we have a big block of time to record today. So we're going to record an actual play, see how it goes, release that on our bi-weekly schedule. Open to feedback. If people love it, we'll keep doing it. If people hate it, we'll go back to our normal format and probably do some more mailbags. But, you know, let us know. Taking a little bit of a departure. We've done it playing through on a ROM stream. We've done it with Band of Blades on our own stream and YouTube. So if you like us playing actual plays, if you like us playing actual plays in Eberron instead of just reminding you or recapping them, this is one way to get us to do it, is to just let us have kids.
So the point here is to play, but we are going to pull back the curtain a little bit more during play than we would if it were just the two of us playing without an audience, so that you can kind of see how we are using some of the advice that we give, and then also can see how we have completely ignored the advice that we give and are actually not very good at this.
Exactly. We've done some pre-production planning on this, so we don't properly need a session zero, but we are going to do a kind of a quick session zero to kind of work through that stuff. And then I think there actually probably are some details we haven't talked about. So it's always good to just check in and do that.
Right. You know, start every campaign, even a short one shot, with at least checking in. So to start off, obviously, safety tools. Shane, you and I have played games for years together, so we're pretty much on the same page with what is allowed and what we're okay with. In keeping with the tone of the show in general, we're going to keep this at most PG-13, but we're also running like a published 5e adventure, so nothing is going to get icky in any way.
Yeah, obviously we're not into anything that harms children or, you know, sexual assault or, you know, fantasy racism or anything like that. We'll try to keep our language clean as well, or ask Rom to fix it in post.
And in general, like there pretty much isn't even going to be any romance. This is a pretty bog standard like dungeon crawl, and there really isn't much chance. Although, I don't know, Shane, if you make it past a Meepo, we'll just see where things go.
I don't know if you've seen my character sheet. There's a high chance of romance, my friend. But of course, if either of us have any questions or troubles, I think we're both comfortable raising our hand and saying, "Hold up," we can X card digitally, just like we do at home.
Mm-hmm. It's always available. All right. So now that safety is out of the way, why is it that we are playing Sunless Citadel? Is it because it's the best 5e adventure?
I don't know. I don't know where it ranks in the canon of 5e adventures. I can tell you it is one of my favorite 3.5 adventures, and I have not played it in 20 years. like close to at least 15 years, but I think pretty close to 20 years since I've played this adventure. I really want to revisit it.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, we were trying to decide who's going to run, who's going to play. We're going to do a solo thing for the show. And, you know, Sunless Citadel came up, and I know that it's one of your favorite adventures of all time. It also contains my absolute least favorite magic item in the entire world, Shatter Spike. So I was interested to see that show up again.
Uh-huh.
And we just both have experience with it. You played through it earlier. I have both read through and then played through the fifth edition version of Sunless Citadel. So we kind of sort of know what we're doing here. And you know, also it's a classic. A lot of people know it. Also, it's super linear. There's a town, yeah. There's a dungeon. You go down the dungeon.
Yeah. The other thing that's helpful in it is that I at least know the overall arc. So in terms of planning actual play episodes, like I know there are important NPCs at certain points that creates natural breakpoints. I can kind of help manage the pacing along with Ishin. Without actually remembering any of the details of what's going on. So I will walk into all of the traps because I am as impetuous as my character.
Perfect. So now this is a solo game, just one player and one GM. So there are some considerations that we've taken to tweak it a little bit. First off, Shane's character is going to start at level 2. Normally you start at level 1. That's just to help survivability on that end, but he still has all the gear of a first level character.
I have also made some choices with my character that I wouldn't necessarily have made. Frankly, not playing the character that I would have liked or otherwise taken to a group, right? Like I playing a character who is on a solo mission, right? And I've given myself that. And also chose class and ability considerations to know that I'm going in solo. One thing that we had talked about actually was me playing a bard, and I argued that we should just let me use my inspiration on myself, and you said that was too big of a change to 5th edition and you weren't happy with it, so I decided to not play a bard.
I also considered just making short rests 5 minutes like in 4th edition, which I would be open to it at some other point, but you know, for our first actual play, we'll do it relatively by the book. That said, all the customization options in Tasha's are available, so we're just gonna kind of run roughshod with the optimization. Maybe I don't know. I guess we'll see. You're only level 2. Not much optimization to do so far.
Well, yeah, but I've made choices, right? So one thing that's important when you're solo adventuring is to make sure that you have multiple options available to you, right? So I had initially kind of kicked around a warlock, but a warlock doesn't have a lot of non-combat pillar abilities, especially at low levels. I settled on a rogue because expertise is great. It makes sure that I can do things, and at low level that's important. But also having just a lot of skills means that I can talk through situations, I can sneak past situations, I can find and disarm and create traps and things like that, as well as rogues are pretty quickly become pretty tanky. So I feel like I have pretty good survivability. And just being able to cunning action, run away and hide, it seems like that would be useful for a solo adventurer in a normal dungeon.
Yeah, because tactically, you're going to be able to do that when in a party that wouldn't be good tactics or even friendly play at the table, because you're either taking the spotlight with you or you're abandoning the party to sort of take the brunt of the damage. But when it's just you, run away and kite is a very viable solution.
Yeah, the other thing is for a solo player, right? If I take 3 rounds to set up my attack, it takes the same amount of time as if I set it up in one turn. There's not really that much else going on at the table other than me. So I can play more methodically and more carefully, and you know, think like more of a mastermind, whereas, you know, in a normal party, it's kind of organized chaos and just try to get your thing out quickly so that the combat keeps moving.
And you are going to have to play tactically because while I've tweaked some of this to make it easier for one character, I certainly have not decreased the difficulty by 4 times. So, I don't know. Be careful. There, anyone who knows this adventure knows that there are potential companions available that you can meet. So assuming that Shane's character doesn't make them very angry, they might be able to join at some point. You know, again, assuming that your PC is interested in that.
I only remember one companion, so I can't wait to piss off the other. But I assure you, I will get that one.
All right, so... what character are you actually playing?
So I am playing a half-elf rogue level 2 by the name of Tez Proudgale. He is the third son of a Lazar prince, a former university student at Moorgrave University, studying history and archaeology. Not quite sure what happened, but my last tuition payment did not come through. It seems that perhaps my father has been deposed from his principality. There is no more funds. They have dried up. The university is not real thrilled with me, given that I owe them last semester's tuition, and they won't let me graduate with my sage. So until I can, two problems I've got to solve here. One, I got to pay my tuition and my back tuition. And two, I need a senior project. You can't just become a sage. You have to actually contribute some real concrete research to the university. And when you're in the archaeology department, that usually means you're going to have to do kind of a field study. And so that's where I am. And, you know, failing that, I'm going to make my way to the Kornberg University and see if I can't transfer some credits.
You're not a gnome, so you're probably going to need to pay out-of-race tuition. So you better make a lot of money.
Okay, well, this job better pay off then. I'm in the market for a good job.
So we've also decided to set this in Eberron because that's a setting that we both like and we're both familiar with.
And we could both improvise pretty easily.
Yeah, seriously. So the location that we're actually starting it in is Mistmarsh instead of Oakhurst. A small town in the south eastern corner of Breland, near some shady business, and a trade road.
And conveniently, near the border of Zalargo.
Perfect.
Where Kornberg is located. So if I'm going to make it into Gnomish territory, I'm going to have to pass through here anyway.
Lovely. All right, so you have selected your... race half elf. You were gonna do a satyr, weren't you, originally?
So I was going with my original thought was a songwriter who had a hit song, got a patron, and then lost his muse. And I was looking for a hit, so I was going to just try and, like, you know, gin up some adventure on my own and maybe try to find some inspiration. But I didn't end up making that work. You putting the kibosh on Bard really killed me there. But that's okay. I'm happy to be Tez. I have been Tez this whole time.
You could have done College Whispers and just use it for extra damage. Eventually. So that's where we are. Oh, and you know, just to facilitate all of this, Shane has access to the player's versions of the maps. He'll just be taking a look at. Again, it's mostly a dungeon crawl, so it doesn't really matter if you know that there are 2 doors behind this thing. It's fine.
Acting like I'm going to look at the map anyway.
It is just about a week before midsummer, if you're the kind of person who pays attention to those sorts of things. And here in this corner of Breland, it's hot and it's wet, and the countryside is lush and green. And here in the town of Mistmarsh, about 900 people, mostly human, some halflings as well, and a scattering of other races, as you usually find here in Corvair, are busy at, well, what usually is work, but for some reason it seems like there are festivities that they are preparing for. There are penance and some floating balloons held aloft by minor enchantments. There are children in costumes, or making costumes, running around in preparation for what our archaeologist Tez surmises is some sort of midsummer festival. And here he is in town.
It's almost midsummer, you say?
Yes, indeed.
So fall semester starts in 5 weeks?
Gotta make that bread.
Gotta get that bread.
So Mistmarsh is an unassuming town. It's mostly a farming community to the north. There's a forest. But, you know, this is a land scarred by war. And, you know, just a few years ago, the last war raged across the countryside. And, you know, not too far away, there are old battlefields where pretty much nothing grows these days. So for the most part, it's safer to stay by the road. And it seems like Mistmarsh has been doing well with trade. There's a general store. There's a shrine to the sovereign host. There's a blacksmith. There's the Old Boar Inn. There's even a jail, because, of course, sometimes people at the inn get into a little bit of trouble. So Tez is in town. It's mid-morning. What brings him here, and where does he go?
So I think I've heard some rumors of some troubles this direction, and if there's one thing that Tez knows, it's that trouble often means there is some secret afoot. And maybe, just maybe, like, this lead will turn out to not just be another group of bandits, but actually, you know, might have something more to it. Because I think as I've made my way through Breland on my way down to Zalargo, like, I've been following up on these types of leads. Sometimes I've even done a couple jobs to, you know, earn a couple coppers or a couple warm meals in a tavern, but haven't yet found something that's really, you know, gonna fit the bill in terms of what I need for the university.
So is there anything that you want to do, or anything that you want to look into, or anyone that you want to talk to?
You said there's a general store, there's a tavern, and there's a jail that are all pretty prominent, kind of in the center.
Right, and the tavern is also an inn, so if you wanted a place to stay, that would be the place to go.
Outside any of those, is there like a community board, or like a, you know, job posting kind of thing like that? Is there any like latest news or wanted posters, anything like that?
There is indeed. Outside the general store, there is a board. And a couple things catch your eye. One is that, yes, indeed, there is going to be a midsummer festival in just about a week's time. There's a crude sort of like child's drawing of what you're going to guess is supposed to be a red dragon, definitely drawn by someone who's never seen a red dragon before. Not sure if you've seen a red dragon, though.
I don't know if I've seen a red dragon alive, but I've certainly seen some of the finest artist sketches of them. And I actually speak Draconic, being as it is one of the oldest languages. As a historian, it's difficult to read a lot of texts if you don't speak Draconic. I also speak Giant. I don't know if you know that, but, you know, I'm really in, like, all in on these dead languages.
Man, you really are an archaeologist.
I know. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I speak Dwarvish, too.
A drunken archaeologist. Perfect.
The three most important languages an archaeologist can speak.
Sorry. Turns out in this adventure, you were going to need Gnomish, Halfling, and Infernal. Weird. Okay.
Well, that's a funny way to pronounce Thieves Can't, Ishan.
All right. So on that flyer, you see, hey, it's a celebration. Get ready for the Ashen Talon, which sounds like a scary name, except this red dragon is sort of like smiling, and you can see that it has like these drawn sort of like grayish claws, but it's like holding some flowers. There's going to be, you know, food and a fair and things. You can see, like, this is a very typical, maybe the anthropologist in you, because, of course, you would have taken some electives, I assume, would say this is a very traditional local celebration. You haven't heard of it before, like the Ashen Talon, or, you know, the Ashen Talon Day, but it's certainly not out of the ordinary. It doesn't seem weird to you.
All right, but no like... you know, want help wanted, or, you know, warnings, anything like that on the board?
Well, there are two more that catch your eye, aside from the, you know, typical lost cat and please clean out my basement from rats that probably won't kill you. There is a notice that is a warning from the local constable that says to be careful if you are outside of the town limits at night, because occasionally cattle have been showing up dead, pierced by some sort of weapon or something that makes like a needle-like stabbings and kills the cows. They're not really sure what's going on. They're not really sure what it is. They're just saying, you know, be careful, you know, watch yourself and, you know, get home before dark.
Sure.
And then the other thing is that Carowyn Hucreel, who is also the woman who runs the general store, which you're right outside, is looking for some people who have disappeared, and she is offering money for information about their whereabouts.
Interesting.
She says, inquire within.
Interesting. Okay, and I've been on the road for a bit. I haven't... have I had anything that sounds like... I feel like I've heard this before, you know, like strange disappearances of livestock and a few people go missing. This sounds like bandits to me. But I'll inquire within, because after all, I'm gonna have to stop in this town. It seems like a good, safe place. This tavern looks like a, you know, might have at least dry and not flea-ridden beds, so...
Well, it certainly sounds like it could be the work of bandits. Why would they kill cattle? Maybe to scare people off, or maybe it was collateral damage. The needle marks, though, seem strange, and they don't ring a bell.
Okay.
So do you want to go to the general store, or do you want to check in at the inn? The general store is the one inquiring about the missing people.
I'll inquire about the missing people first. I think that's, you know, kind of... maybe suss out what the job prospects are before I go decide how expensive of a room to let.
All right, so inside, it's well appointed. It's the Eberron equivalent of a bodega, perhaps, where you have almost everything that you could possibly need stacked up neatly on high shelves in not a very large space, but it's very tidy. And there's only one person inside that you can see, although, you know, there's a door into the back stock room. There is a middle-aged human woman who is well-dressed behind the counter, and you can spot, because you also knew many people with them as well, she has a signet ring that marks her at least as a noble in these parts. She doesn't seem particularly wealthy, but she at least has the name.
Then I will step up to the counter and ask, are you Carowyn by chance?
She looks up, why yes. She sort of scans you up and down and can see that you are, travel weary, but your clothes are relatively nice, right? You're a scholar?
As a scholar, it is important to travel incognito and not to look too nice, and also not to look like too soft of a target. So I everything is basically under like some simple traveling clothes, a simple cloak, right? They're new, right? They're in good repair, but they're not fine or fancy or anything like that. I'm wearing my oldest nice boots, so they're nice and beat up, you know? And I also I don't think I'm openly carrying any armor or weapons or anything like that. Like I have my short bow is I'm using as like a walking staff. It's been unstrung. You know, I probably have a dagger on my hip, but not anything more formidable than that. You know, I'm covering up that I'm wearing armor.
Okay. You have arms and armor, but you are not openly displaying them.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm not here to pick a fight. If somebody wants to rob me, then I'm going to give them the money that I've set aside to be paid to bandits.
So she looks you up and down. She says, well, greetings, traveler. What brings you to our lovely town and what can I get you? As you can see, I have whatever wares you might want.
Ah, Tez Proudgale is the name. I'm... lucky you, from the university. And I am making a bit of an academic pilgrimage down to Zalargo, and I I have elected to stop in your town, and I saw your advertisement about, I suppose, your request for help.
Help? I wouldn't say it was help so much. I'm looking for able adventurers. You say you're from the university. I assume you mean the University of Kornberg, yes?
No, the Moorgrave University.
Oh, the college.
Yes.
I see.
I don't know that I like your tone, but I'm willing to ignore it if you're willing to tell me more about what you need.
Well, she sort of looks down at your short bow. Do you know how to use that, or...?
My walking stick? Yes, of course. I set it in front of me and it helps hold my balance, keep my pace.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful. Well, you know what? No one else has been by recently. I'm willing to take a chance. I'm looking for a few people who headed out to the west several weeks ago, and they have not returned. If you go after them, though, I'm not sure that you'll return either. So I think you and I can agree that I'm not going to pay you up front.
Yeah, okay. When you say west, what's west? Because I just came from the road from the west.
Ah, well, it wouldn't be right on the road, would it? If they're on the road, then I would know exactly where they were. What is it that you say you do?
I'm from the history department. I study history and anthropology and archaeology.
Archaeology.
I'm a field researcher, of course.
She thinks for a second. Archaeology, interesting. So you're good at unearthing the past?
I am quite skilled in liberating artifacts from their terrestrial holdings.
Interesting. She sort of thinks for a minute and then kind of like sighs inwardly to herself and says, all right, fine. I have no idea if you are capable in any way, but I don't think it hurts to tell you this. There were two members of my family, Talgrin and Sharwin, who set out on what they thought would be a lovely adventure with two others, and they have not returned, and they headed to the rumor of a sunken citadel off to the west, the northwest, obviously not directly on the road, only a few hours travel, some say, in a deep ravine.
At that, Tez starts like leaning in like very intently at the word sunken citadel.
And she sort of like waves her hand. It's like, I mean, of course there have always been, you know, rumors of things out in the wilderness, and, you know, mostly they're old wives' tales, but you know how young children can be. So the four of them set off and they haven't returned. I would love for you to go after them and bring me news of them, or bring them back to me if they are in danger. And I will offer you salvage rights to anything that you find there. And if you bring both of the children back, I will give you, she sort of like thinks about it for a second, 125 gold pieces each.
Quickly doing the math on tuition payments and what I owe and the interest on my on last semester, and I'm like, 125 gold plus salvage rights. All right, but you've also got to give me fair market value for anything I find here. I'm not gonna, yeah, if I find something down there and I need to liquidate it quickly, I need you to be my buyer.
She thinks about it for a second and says, if you bring things back in good condition, yes, I'll give you the going rate. But I will commit to buy your salvage.
I think this can work. Can you maybe write down a description of them? My memory is, you know.
Yes. So she gives you a description. So the people who are missing are a brother and sister, Talgin Hucreel and Sharwin Hucreel, a paladin, Sir Brayford, and a ranger named Caracas. Sir Brayford has a magical weapon. she doesn't know what it was called, but she remembered the glint of it, and you know, she has the eye of an appraiser and knows it was definitely magical. Of course, if you find it and he is let's say no longer in possession of it, you're welcome to keep it.
Okay.
She pulls out a local map and then marks the general area. She says, of course, I've never been out here, but this is where they said they were headed. Only half a day's march to the northwest. They said there's a deep ravine. They took a great deal of rope.
Let me ask you a question. You said that they went out there on a rumor, and you happen to know where the location is. What was the rumor that they went out there chasing if you already know where this is?
She narrows her eyes and says, that's relatively insightful for you. I'm glad to see I'm not dealing with a complete nitwit. Yes, you're right. The mayor knows more. I will say this. He did not know that that's why the party ventured out, but he has his suspicions about what might be there.
Interesting. Well, then I think we have an accord, and I offer to shake her hand.
She will shake it. And she has hands that are not as soft as most nobles that you remember, because she works for a living.
Tez also has hands that are not as soft as she might expect for a traveling scholar. And I think when he reaches out, to shake, there's a dagger at his waist that's sort of like, you know, positioned to be used, right? It isn't just, it isn't like kind of in a flashy spot. It's in the kind of spot where you surprise somebody with it rather than use it as like a deterrent. You know, it's like it's at the right spot of your hip to like quickly access versus the spot like kind of maybe more in the front where it would be like, I'm armed, you know, don't mess with me, I'm armed, right?
So she spots it. And then as your handshake finishes, she looks at you and says, perhaps you'll be more successful than I had initially thought.
Well,
I hope to see you soon with good news.
And, rope. You said they brought lots of rope. I find myself perhaps needing a few more lengths.
She says, yes, I have fine wares, hempen or silken.
What's the house discount?
Fine, and she tosses you a length of hempen rope.
Great. And having struck a hard bargain, Tez leaves to find the mayor.
Hey people, this is Aram, editor of Total Party Thrill and the producer of the actual play Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall. God's Fall tells the story of Khal'gun, a world broken by a war that ended with the destruction of gods and magic. Most of the planet was swallowed by a permanent world storm, and the five remaining kingdoms of man settled into an uneasy peace. 100 years later, magic and divinity are returning, reborn in the young heroes of our story. Doro, the god of travel. Zion, the god of force. Phryne, the god of emotion. Torvik, the god of beasts. Rina, the god of luck. And Lord Haldir Loran, the arisen god of war. Hounded by those who fear and envy their newfound power, our heroes fight to uncover the mystery of the God's War and the divine entity at the heart of the Union, a tower built by the old gods to confine the worst of their own creations. To find out more about the show, check us out at godsfall.com.
I now have an extra 50-foot length of hempen rope.
That's 100. Hey. All right. So not too far away, you can see this is sort of like the village square. You know, most of the people live in outlying farms, but, you know, the few stores and communal spaces are right in this area. So you basically step outside and you can see across the way is the village hall where you expect the mayor would be. And indeed, inside there are a few clerks and workers. And there is a rather portly, mustachioed human man working at a desk with a fine quill. And you can see, again, just like Carowyn, he is also wearing a signet ring.
I will announce myself to a secretary or whoever is at the like the front of the hall, mm-hmm. that I wish to seek an audience with the mayor, if you would not mind troubling him, good sir.
So one of the secretaries comes forward and says, well, it's good to see someone with manners around here, finally. Most people are already drunk on the revelry before the Midsummer Festival. But yes, of course, you need to speak to me first to make an appointment, because I am, of course, very important. That's how these things work. You can't just talk to the mayor right away like people want to do all the time.
I understand. I understand completely. Is he free, say, 15 minutes from now?
I will check his book. Flips through a ledger. Says, yes, he is. In fact, you know what? He's free right now. He's also free this afternoon and tonight. You know what? Why don't we just go over and talk with him right now? I'll introduce you.
Oh, you can put me in the ledger if you'd like.
Of course I shall. What name shall I write down?
Tez Proudgale.
Proudgale, what a fascinating name. Not a local, though.
Indeed, I am not. I'm here visiting from the university.
Ah, the university. The University of Kornberg, yes?
Morgrave University.
Oh, the college.
Why does everybody say that?
That's fine. I'm sure that's great. Are you here for the festival? Maybe to observe the amazing things that happen?
I might be. We'll see how this goes.
That's interesting. All right. So he walks you over to the mayor and says, may I introduce you to the mayor, Werner Lang? And the mayor sort of puts his quill down, looks up. Tez here is a scholar from the college who is here to observe our festivities. I think he may be interested in some of the strange goings on.
And I lean in a little conspiratorially as I like offer a hand in introduction, and I say, I am indeed interested in the goings on.
So the mayor looks up at the secretary, is a little bit surprised at first, but then, you know, sort of looks at you, you know, looks you up and down and says, ah, interesting. So word has already made it to Morgrave that, I had not expected that, but you know what? This is not a problem. In fact, this is a bit interesting. I think it may put Mistmarsh on the map, finally.
Certainly. Well, why don't you just start at the start and end at the end and get me up to speed, and then we'll see what to do next about the thing.
Ah, yes, of course, the thing. Well, perhaps you already know, but I'll fill you in a bit of information. For the past few years, we've been getting a visitor at the Midsummer Festival. He sort of like turns to the left and the right, even though there's really nobody here except people who work for him. I hesitate to say it, but we get a visit from goblins.
Goblins?
Yes, indeed, right before the Midsummer Festival.
Coming from Dargoon?
One would think. We're not actually sure. They just arrive. And of course, we are not on friendly terms with the locals who may be coming here from Dargoon, but we certainly don't want to cause any trouble. So, you know, when they first arrived maybe a dozen years ago, we tried to parlay, and it turned out that all they were interested in is selling a piece of fruit, a lovely piece of fruit, with remarkable healing properties. And now, each year, they return. So our little Ash Talon Festival has turned into a bit of a soiree that many in the local community are excited about, because everyone's sort of vying to be one of the ones who is healed.
This sounds truly mystical, magical, miraculous even. What is the Ash Talon Festival? I saw the drawing of the dragon with the flowers. Where did that come from?
So he sort of like leans back in his chair and like pulls his suspenders out, and he seems excited to be knowledgeable. And he says, you know, the children call it the Ash Talon Festival, sort of a fairy tale of a dragon who lived a long time ago and sort of laid waste to the area. Now he sort of played as a bit of a fool during the festival. Children dress up and, you know, chase each other around. But of course, the truth is far darker.
Truth is all I'm interested in, my friend.
Ah, well, you've come to the right place. Here in this small town, we are all about the truth.
And I lick the tip of my quill, you know, as I start to take some more notes.
Ashen Talon is just a bastardization of the name.
Ashardalon.
The Red Dragon, who lived, some say, 1,000 years ago, and once laid waste to this entire area. Fortunately, time heals all wounds.
Interesting. And yet this name has persisted for thousands of years.
Or descended down into essentially nursery rhymes. Why don't you give me a history check?
I have a +2 history. 6.
6 is not great. A Shardalon certainly sounds like a dragon's name.
I was going to say, I do speak Draconic.
You think it was probably more than 1,000 years ago if this dragon did exist, because 1,000 years ago was the beginning of Galifar. So, like, humans were still...
Right, yeah, there were no dragons on Corvair 1,000 years ago, right?
Not rampaging around. Could it have been 1,500 years ago, 2,000 years ago? That's certainly more doable. So it doesn't necessarily mean that this is not true. The other thing you would know just about dragons in general is, especially during those times, long, long ago, they would have attracted followers.
Interesting. I would love, if you don't mind, to ask around a bit more in town and hear, you know, more versions of the tale. Like, one of the things that we like to record at the university is, you know, how the nature of myths evolve and how the folk tales that surround them change. So it would be great if you wouldn't mind I ask a few more questions about that. Is that okay?
Oh, certainly. Yes, yes. Please. Record and meet people and get their stories. Yes, I'm very excited. And perhaps at the college one day we'll have some sort of a soiree and there'll be a Mistmarsh festival.
In my notes, I say, boring, move on.
You know, one person to actually talk to would be Garen, the barkeeper at the Old Boar. He's one of the old-timers who seems to know most of the stories.
All right, will do. Now, I guess perhaps more urgently, seeing as it will happen again in a week, tell me about this piece of fruit and its magical, mystical, miraculous healing properties.
It looks like an apple, like a perfect apple. People who eat of it are cured of whatever ailment they are currently suffering from. Only a few, though. Each needs to take a bite, so probably only, you know, 4 or so people are able to benefit from it. There is one strange thing that does happen. Of course, we're interested in propagating this fruit. We would love to have access to this. You know, for the greater good of all Corvair, of course.
Of course.
Of course. When we plant the seeds, every year, before they can actually bloom, the plants are stolen, ripped up out of the ground. We suspect it may be the goblins who want to maintain a monopoly on whatever plant they are growing this fruit from. But we have no way of knowing, and of course we haven't accused them of it because we don't want them to stop if we are wrong.
Ah, indeed. And do you know from whence these goblins come? I mean, you say you only see them once a year, but they must be close by if they're able to, you know, pilfer your crops.
We're not sure. It always happens at night, so, I mean, we have patrols and guards, though. The town guard is always on the lookout, but we never see what happens. So perhaps they are very stealthy. Perhaps they're coming from Dargoon and traveling a long distance. We're unsure. It would seem strange to have goblins nearby and we wouldn't know about it, and we haven't heard of any.
Very curious. Well, I look forward to witnessing the festival and seeing these goblins and this miraculous fruit with my own eyes. I'm sure that my colleagues at the university would enjoy to learn of such events with an eyewitness, you know, a credible scholar, as it were.
Ah, yes, we're very excited. Yes, yes, it seems like we're moving on up in the world.
You just might be.
And with that, he seems very pleased with himself, and he sort of goes back to his reams of paperwork.
I will show myself out, sir. And again, thank you for taking the time to meet me. And I also like kind of nod at the secretary who you know, cleared the calendar for me, and thank him, you know, kind of give him a wink.
The secretary seems very happy and shows you out before closing the door.
Sounds like probably want to go to the barkeep, learn about this Ashtalon festival, and probably get myself a room.
You head on over. It is almost noon, so the place isn't packed, but there are some people in here eating and definitely still some people in here drinking. And behind the bar is a human man. You can see he's probably in his 60s or 70s, serving food and pouring drinks. And as you step in, he says, "Oh, hello, hello, come in, come in. Don't mind at all that there's no Galanda seal. We don't need these around here. It's fine, it's fine. Come on in, come on in."
"Thank you for your hospitality. Certainly you're as hospitable as any anybody with a Galanda seal that I've ever encountered. You must be Garen."
"Oh, that's me. You've heard of me. Yes, yes. And you must be a traveler from elf places."
"That is slightly offensive, but I'm willing to let it slide, Garen. My name is Tez Proudgale, and I am a scholar from the university here to learn a little bit more about your town, and I have some questions for you."
"Why do people always say that I'm being offensive? I don't really have a seat. Have a seat."
It's almost like after a certain point, at a certain age, you just stop caring as much about what other people think and how they feel, and that you are sometimes grow insensitive to it because you're recalcitrant in your ways. Never mind, it's fine.
He nods and he's like, that sounds about right. Yeah. Hmm.
"Well, thank God that we have the system of monarchy to ensure that nothing changes too rapidly in our world so that you don't become uncomfortable, old man. Hail the monarchy."
"I like things the way that I like them. So what can I get you? Do you need food, drink? You need a place to stay? You're here for the festival?"
"I'm starving, I'm thirsty, and I'm probably staying for the festival, I am. But I spoke to Mayor Ling, and he recommended that I also get you to bend my ear a bit about the history of the festival."
It's a thing children do. They seem to love it. There's a dragon, and they pretend like the dragon is their friend and having a great old time and not going to eat them all and devour them in its belly, right?"
I will kind of like laugh along and then sort of do that lean in, that conspiratorial lean, you know, where I'm like, "Garen, come on. I mean, it's a kid's story, right? I mean, I know, we all know that's a children's story. Come on. What's really going on? What's the real history of the festival? Come on. I mean, you wouldn't lie to a scholar, would you?"
So, like, some of the people sitting at the bar and a couple, like, at tables are like,
yeah, Garen, what? Yeah, tell him about the scary dragon. Yeah.
You can see that, like, he's kind of getting ribbed because he's told the story before and people sort of roll their eyes at it. So when you seem interested, he leans in and he's like, Don't listen to these people. If there were dragons around here, people would be terrified. Dragons eat people. I know for a fact there used to be people who worshipped that dragon. Ashtalanta.
Ashtalon, I believe it's pronounced. And I pronounce it with a flawless draconic accent, which makes me sound extra like I've just returned from studying abroad.
It's a creme brulee.
it's a Melbourne.
He says, "Exactly. I'm glad I could teach you. I'm glad I could help. That's exactly right. That's how you say it. And people worshipped that dragon. There were people around here who built a shrine to it. A cult of a dragon. Right around here in Mistmarsh."
Back in those days, this wasn't Mistmarsh yet, was it?"
"Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. No, I don't. I guess it wasn't. Then it was just, I don't know, wilderness, I guess? Because they didn't build anything in here. They built a citadel for a dragon. Some say, you know, not too far away. In like a deep ravine."
"At the bottom of a ravine, they built a citadel."
"Got to keep it safe. Got to protect it, I suppose."
"Interesting. And, what do you know about that citadel? Where is it today? Has anybody found it?"
"Where is it? I certainly don't know where it is. But, you know, I was talking to Carowyn Hugh Creel. I told her about it, and she seemed very interested. But even more interested was two of her kids."
That would be Taugon and Sharwin.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And I heard they headed off to look for it, which, you know, I'll tell you, I don't think that was too smart. You know, going off looking for things that are dangerous.
I don't know that you really asked me about it, but, you know, what I study at the university is actually history and anthropology and a little bit of archaeology there, Garen. That's actually exactly what I do, is I go looking for ancient trouble and try to unearth it, you know, learn something about it, and, you know, between you and me, make a little profit on it.
Oh, his eyes light up. Profit, that's a great idea. You know, you seem like you got a good head on your shoulders. I'll say, speaking of profit, you know, this whole Midsummer Festival thing, I think there are ways we can make a lot more money on this, but some people in town don't necessarily agree.
As I'm, like, sipping my beer, kind of, I think of, I think Tez is kind of over this conversation now. You know, he's gotten, maybe thinks he's gotten all he can out of it. So he's just kind of like, oh, yeah, tell me about your business plan.
Well, and he leans in. Well, about once a year, some goblins come by and they got a magic fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying, sure, we can heal some old farmers. But what we really could do is sell it. To the highest bidder. Think of all the money that would bring in every single year. These goblins, they want a pittance. They want 50 gold pieces for it. That's what a deal.
50 gold pieces. That's, I mean, I've had healing drafts more expensive than 50 gold pieces.
That's what I'm saying. It's very weird, but maybe they don't understand the value of money.
It feels like so few people these days do understand the value of money. Am I right?
That's right. That's right. I will say, doesn't happen every year, but every once in a while they come at midwinter as well.
I'm sorry,
they come at midwinter, but this time they don't have an apple that heals. They got an apple that kills.
They kind of buried the lead on that one there, and they didn't mention this whole, like, duality of man situation going on with these goblins and these apples.
Yeah, no, there's no dual men. They're goblins. They're just a few goblins.
Yeah.
I think maybe the same ones.
So, why, they just gift you a poisonous apple? I don't understand.
Well, again, they want to sell it. And, you know, if there's a thing that can kill, then there's people who will pay for it. Now, we usually send them away because we don't know, no trouble there. I just want to sell the healing fruit. But I'm just saying, those goblins are up to no good.
Where do these goblins come from, Garen?
You know, that's a good question. That's a good question. I hear things sometimes. I hear things here in my tavern, and I got speculation.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard those Hugh Creel kids talking one time while they were eating here, and they thought, maybe the goblins and the dragon had something to do with each other.
Uh huh.
Well, of course, I had to share information because, you know, everybody comes to old Garen and asks what he knows. So I told him, you know, about the location of the citadel, and they said they were going to check it out. Maybe that's where the goblins are coming from, and maybe that's where the plant is that makes the fruit.
Now that is very curious, Garen. I really appreciate you sharing that with me, and I look forward to you marking that location on my map as well. Because being a scholar at the university doesn't pay as well as you might think. Actually, you gotta pay them to do it, so I'm looking for a job, and Carolyn Hukril is offering a pretty coin to go find her kids, so I'm gonna go find them kids.
Oh, that's quite neighborly of you. So he takes a look at your map and says, oh, someone already marked the location. That's good. And then he thinks for a second and says, I'm having a little deja vu. Interesting. The Hukrils were gonna go here, but I remember maybe 13 years ago, there was a weird man passing through town who was asking some questions about the dragon as well.
Uh-huh.
I guess maybe I mentioned something about the citadel. I might have done. He had a big frog with him. It was weird.
A frog?
Wait, is that offensive? Am I not supposed to say that frog was weird? Because the frog was weird.
No, I think good on the frog is a weird thing. And now Tez's eyes kind of, like, they've been very bright this whole time, and they dim a little bit, thinking somebody has already beat him to those salvage rights. And he goes, "You already told something about the somebody, something about the Citadel, and don't suppose that they've already cleaned it out then, huh?"
"Well, like I said, it was 13 years ago, and haven't seen him since. Certainly didn't show up with a mule full of salvage to sell. Haven't seen him since, so I guess he's dead."
"All right. Well, yeah, sounds like I better be careful then, huh?
Well, you should always be careful. Did you hear? There's a blowgun killers outside the town limits."
"Blowgun killers?"
"Yeah, what else could make those needle marks? But lots and lots of blow darts. I hear they come from Zendrick."
"Blowgun killers from Zendrick, you say? I kind of was under the impression it was just your regular run-of-the-mill bandits."
"That's what they want you to think, but listen to old Garen, he knows."
"All right, old Garen, what do you think about those blowgun killers?"
"Oh, I think they're here to kill our cattle."
"Mm-hmm."
"Mm-hmm." And he just nods like that answered it.
"Do they take the cattle? Do they eat the cattle?"
"Oh, no, it's just to scare us."
"To scare you into what?"
"Into obviously not having cattle, because they don't like cows."
"Hmm. All right. Well, I'll put it on my list."
Do you want a room here, or are you all set?"
"Yeah, I mean, it's getting kind of late in the day, right? So I probably want to head out at first light."
2 silver pieces for a room. He'll slide over a key, and then as you head up to your room, you can hear him, like, now continuing this cow conspiracy theory blowgun thing with the other patrons, who are all kind of making fun of him.
"Oh, boy. All right. I'm going to go to my room and try to piece this together, make sure that, like, I've got an idea of what's going on here. So, sounds like I need to be careful as I leave town. Be careful of whatever it is that's attacking the cattle, bandits or otherwise. And then it's a couple hours out there, right, to get to where it's marked on my map for the ravine.
Right.
And then I've got to climb down a ravine to get to a citadel that was built at the bottom.
That seems to be the case.
Okay. And all the while, I'm looking for evidence of the 2 Hukriel kids, a Ranger Caracas and a Paladin
Sir
Brayford.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And if you can bring them back alive, you'll get some money. If you bring back evidence, you'll get a little less money.
Okay. And if I bring back salvage, I get to sell that at market rate right here and leave with the gold.
That is true. That is 100% true.
I'm going to go back downstairs and ask to rent a mule tomorrow. Who can let me a mule?
They can definitely do that here at the regular price of how much a mule costs.
If that mule costs more than this tavern room, then I'm going to be upset.
How much gold do you have right now, like extra after you bought gear?
I only have my starting gear and the hempen rope, so I have, I think I have a dungeoneering kit. I upgraded myself to studded leather armor.
With the money from your background, right?
Yeah, and I have 10 gold.
That's exactly what I would have done.
So I guess I have 9 gold and 8 silver now. I guess this is where we landed. Love accounting.
A donkey or a mule is 8 gold pieces, but they will let you rent one for 2 as long as you actually bring it back.
Okay.
Don't, then you're going to get charged
The full freight.
Yeah.
Okay. So 2 gold pieces, or what is it? I got to give them 8 gold to hold it and then I can sell it back for 6?
Because it is Carowyn Hukriel, she'll do it for 2.
Okay.
Because you're kind of working for her.
Okay. Then I will take her up on that. 7 gold and 6 silvers.
Perfect. Anything else you want to do in town, or do you want to head out?
Is there anything, like, I'm having a bit of a moment myself. Is there anything that, like, in terms of, like, climbing down a ravine, or like anything in the dark that I'm not thinking of, right, that I should just like prep for? Like I grabbed rope. I have pitons in my dungeoneering kit. Is there anything else that I really need? Like, is there anything else that's useful to climb that I'm not thinking of, like, as a player?
There's a climber's kit, but, you know, as long as no one's shooting at you, like a knotted rope should get you down a ravine relatively speedily.
I cannot afford a climber's kit.
Right, so then...
I don't even have to ask to know that I can't afford that, so...
you won't need to do any mountain climbing, I'll say that.
Okay, we're balling on a budget here, so we're going to go with our free rope. Then I'll take my mule and probably like an hour before first light even, I will head out. As I leave, is Garen awake when I leave?
Before first light, he's not. But he does live here.
Okay, then I'm going to go disturb him.
It takes a little while, but eventually he answers it and says, what? Oh, do you want breakfast?
Oh, no, I'm good. I'll eat on the road. I'm going to head out, Garen. I've got this letter here, and do me a favor, as you know, one appreciator of the old days to another. If I'm not back in 3 days, I want you to go ahead and send this letter onward to my family in the Lazar, and send this letter back to the university, if you wouldn't mind. Now, that's Moorgrave University, not the University of Korenberg.
Oh, right, the college. Yeah, sure. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'll hold it for you. Sure.
You know what? And go ahead. Maybe let Carowyn know too. You know, if you do have to send those letters, just let her know.
I'll have her pay for it. Orion posts.
Smart man, Garen. Actually, before I leave, let me just ask you: have you ever been to Demacia?
Nope, can't say that I have. Been born in Mistmarsh, raised in Mistmarsh, probably gonna die in Mistmarsh.
Well, it's a faraway place. I just had to ask. Well, I'll be seeing you sooner than 3 days, but just in case, keep a hold of that letter for me.
Have fun storming the Citadel.
Yes, sir. And with that, I think I'm happy to head out.
The terrain is pretty rocky. You can see that it used to be a road, but has been overgrown now for probably several centuries. So it's relatively slow going, but your donkey is sure-footed. What is your passive perception?
It is 14.
And as a half-elf, you have dark vision.
I do. 60 feet worth.
You're making your way on kind of rough terrain, but it's relatively clear. And then off to the side, not too far away, are, you know, tall grasses that are sort of swaying in a light, warm breeze. But it's still dark. Like you said, you set out about an hour before first light. But you spot some movement in the grass that doesn't seem to quite fit with a regular swaying motion. And right in front of you, suddenly it looks like a walking bundle of twigs emerges from the high grass. It's walking on these spindly, bark-covered legs, and you can see, instead of hands, it has sharp, needle-like fingers, and they are jabbing out at you as two of them come right for you. And we'll find out what happens next in 2 weeks.
All right, Ishan, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sans Carne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrill.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Total Party Thrill.
And you can join the conversation on Discord. There's a link in the show notes. And we want to take this moment to thank our Patreon supporters.
Your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show. So if you'd like to learn more, you can check out all our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill.
And since this one has a little more editing going into it, I just want to shout out our editor again, Aram Vardian, at Vardian, V-A-R-T-I-A-N, on Twitter. Find him on the God's Fall podcast. He does all this work for us each week, and he's putting in an extra shift to do an actual play for us. So thank you, Aram.
You hear those sound effects? That's thanks to Aram.
All right, what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We're continuing our playthrough of the 5th edition adventure, Sunless Citadel.
Well, that's it for actual play episode number one of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.